This is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Could you whisper in my ear the things you want to feel? I give you anything. Feel it coming. Do you wake up on your own? I wonder where you are and live with all your faults. I want to wake up where you are. I won't say anything at all, so I don't decide.
Ten minutes after nine here on the west coast of America. Joining me from the West Coast is Jeff Kenny. Jeff, what's up?
How are you, Matt?
All right. The last I saw Jeff, he was like losing a fight with a rental car company in North Carolina. And joining us from Texas is Tim Lynch. Timmy, what's up?
Not much, buddy. How are you?
You know what? I'm all right, man. I am all right. I got. I don't have too many issues these days, man.
Yeah, no, that's always a good place to be.
It is. I don't get there very often, but it is pretty cool. I'm not going to tell you. I even had a corporal before I came on the air. A corporal called me from Quantico. Hey, Serge, you got the Warrior Wellness Octagon? I can't download it at work to my computer. I said, yeah, those criminals. Those calm criminals, man. They never let you get to the good stuff. So, it's like, makes your day, right? Somebody's trying to make somebody else better. So, pretty cool. Jeff, tell the story about your rental car. Listen to this.
Well, as you know, since shortly after Wilbur and Orville Wright invented the airplane, they opened a small airport outside of Camp Lejeune in Richlands. And so, after it seemed like 100 years, they finally put a rental car business in there. And little kiosks, which is great because usually you had to get a taxi or something out to Jacksonville to get a rental car. And so I took advantage of one of those, and I got fucked in the ass, to excuse my French. But, the only vehicle they had was a 16-pack van. And there was a lady in front of me who had, like, 3 months before had locked out of a vehicle, and she didn't get it. And the clerk at the thing, he looked like a guy who used to be a Marine, got out and gained 300 pounds. And, you know, he was singularly unimpressed with her, you know, with her grief and everything. And he said to me, hey, this is all we got. Take it or leave it. So, of course, I took it so I could get out of that part of North Carolina and get into the urbane, you know, environs of Jacksonville. And then it started going to shit. I put the emergency brake on when I got the hotel and it wouldn't go off. And for days, I battled with them trying to get them to either send someone to replace the vehicle or take it back or inject me with lethal injection so I'd be out of my misery or something, you know. But finally, the night before,
they wouldn't lethal inject him. They wouldn't send anybody out.
They wouldn't. And they came finally at 21:30, the night before I left, they came. And this is with me, and I actually did the nuclear option. I engaged my wife, Lori, who was like she's like one of those druid banshees, you know what I mean? And she was on them like stink on shit, man. And that did a little bit, but
not much.
Not much.
So how did ultimately it end?
Well, I finally got a Vic, and not a guy with a ponytail and like six teeth. He came and he brought me a car on a flatbed tow truck, a car, and then me and him, we had to get it out of the parking lot of that hotel we're in, and it was everybody was parking there. This guy was a master though, for all his redneck looking like stuff. He was very good and very smart, and I didn't want to abandon him to this thing I had around my neck, you know, this cross. So I stayed there with him. I helped him a little bit, and he got it loaded up, and he left. And then the next morning, like, I said goodbye to you, and off I went back here to California, where they want to tax me for my shampoo bottles and my water, drinking water. So
there you go. So yeah, it was just like constant fight throughout the week with the rental car company.
Yes.
You would think, and you would think it's like, oh, we're sorry, we'll be right out there to deliver you a new car, and then we'll take the keys, and then we'll take charge of the other car, right? No. We don't want you to be inconvenienced.
No,
that's
they didn't.
Not how it worked.
No, no, they're like, oh, you're in Jacksonville. And the guy came all the way from Raleigh-Durham. Because
what?
I guess Jacksonville's like Comanche territory in Texas in the 1860s to the rest of the people in North Carolina, you know? So it's the Escondido Macarado or whatever they called that that big plains area in Texas there, you know?
No idea. No, the no idea.
Estacano, yeah.
The
That just shows you how far away a decision maker is from Jacksonville.
Yeah, right.
Well, obviously,
they cost them an arm and a leg.
They have to get high marks for at least figuring out they don't want to be in Jacksonville, though, right?
You're exactly right, Tim. And that was their always they fell back on. I'm not authorized to make that decision.
No, that's what I'm saying. So anything outside the norm in your rental experience, and you're screwed because they've got to go communicate halfway across the state and find somebody who cares.
Yeah, I mean Jacksonville's got
which of those? Let's talk about that problem. Which is more difficult, communicating halfway across the state or finding somebody who cares?
Oh,
I would think in the rental car industry, it would be the communications portion. You would think finding somebody that cares is sort of like the point of the business model. I mean, my for crying out loud. I mean, most of those places are pretty savvy about hooking you up when they've screwed up. I mean, that's how you stay in business, right?
It tends to be.
Yeah. So. The only people who really care about doing a good job that I ran into there was the people at Twin Peaks. Where they made that great pot roast me and Mac had, and they were service after the sale type people, you know.
Yeah, no, I mean we had one of the great meals of our visit, and that is fried pickles, and which were incredible, and pot roast, which is a dish that Jeff said he hadn't had since you were 8 years old.
Yes, and I was living at home, but you're right, and we were served by a girl who. A server who stepped right out of the page of Little Abner, and yes, it was like, you know, completely raggedy top and, you know, really short shorts and stuff.
Hey, I
went to the Twin Peaks in Corpus Christi a couple years ago, right?
That's
and I was
great.
So disappointed because there was a distinct absence of any kind of notable Twin Peaks on the waitstaff. I mean, it was like, oh come on, man.
Come on.
I thought that was the point because the hamburgers suck.
In Texas, where everything's bigger.
Yeah.
I would think that would be a weird thing. I noticed that it was an anomaly, I'm sure. But I was disappointed. I'm like, well, I'm not coming back here. This is false advertising.
Let me just tell you, as a testament to our age, we did not go there for the Twin Peaks. We went there for the pot roast.
Neither did I. I mean, for heaven forbid. Jeff and I were pissed
because we're senior citizens, if we would have got there before 3 o'clock, we could have got it on the cheap.
Yeah, no kidding. That's exactly right. And my wife schools me on that senior citizen veterans discount fucking society that's out there.
Yeah, come on. What are you going to do? Hey, yeah. I'm a disabled veteran.
Yeah.
Can you give me... $1 off this meal?
I'm appalled at doing that shit. I just stand there with a vapid grin on my face while Lori does it, you know? Sit there.
She said, he's
in. Time for me to go to the head.
All right, I want to, I texted you all earlier today about a letter that our friend published, a policy letter for the 2nd Marine Division. So I want to get your opinions. Because this will certainly not play well in Peoria, right?
No.
There will
no.
be people that are indignant. You'll be able to read the letter here. As soon as I hit publish in a post that I'll put up in a matter of seconds as we're talking. But I'm curious, Jeff, your thoughts. Does the Marine Corps have a discipline problem?
Yes. And I have a little extra knowledge in this because a little bit more dependable than third shitter from the right. I was talking to an officer yesterday who had been sitting in on a civets or a VTC with the MEF commanders. And the MEF commander of 2MEF was saying, I'm going to initiate this new directive that does basically being engineered by the commanding general of the 2nd Marine Division about a return to discipline standards. You know, and so this has been spread now. People are watching intently what's going on there at Camp Lejeune, and that. But it is true we do have a discipline problem because the Marine Corps under the regime of President Obama embraced the philosophy of, you know, identity politics within the service. We got little enclaves, in my opinion, of. How can I put it? I'm talking about homosexuals, transgenders, and lesbian women, and they have their own little groups, and they're untouchable. And now that's not really that much of a problem in itself, because even those populations are fairly small. But the fact that they're untouchable, that most commanders at the 05 level and above won't touch it, they won't go there. And so it has ramifications throughout the force, because when you see someone's not being held accountable for wrongdoing, it breaks down all the other. If you have a law that you don't obey, it eventually contributes to the breakdown of other laws. And that's, I think, my opinion, that is the danger, you know, that they face right now. And I think it has applications across all the services. And I think, Mac, it's connected to the thing that you brought up about the ship, the ships, the McCain and the one you talked about before that. That type of untouchability for certain groups can lead to disaster.
I'll make this comment. Jeff and I will disagree, but I don't think it's a transgender or any other thing like that. I think that the Marine Corps has, like our society, it's gotten soft on its own discipline. We grew up in a Marine Corps that was, you know, that we, I thought, and now in retrospect, the way you got ready to go to fight was there was exactness in your, whether it be your daily routine, the way you went to the field, and there was structure with that. You didn't pick.
Everybody was the same, right?
Yeah, you didn't pick and choose the rules that, you know, field day was an event. It got inspected. It wasn't a general fucking cleanup that the gunny did a walk through on. It was a formal event that started in the afternoon on Thursday afternoon, and everything got fucking cleaned, and the commanding officer walked through and inspected it on Friday with the first sergeant. And so when you turn your back on that shit over and over, you know, the effect ultimately is what I think was partially what happened to us in Afghanistan. Of the last 31 Marines that got killed, 19 were our fault. 19. We were doing things like, you know, you're ordered not to drive a Gator off a base, off a firm base. They can only be used there. Well, fuck, you know, we have all this gee dunk and we have this shit we want to take down to our, you know, our squad, you know, outpost. We can't carry it all. Right, and all of our other shit, so we'll just take the fucking Gator down there, right?
Wrong, yeah.
No, this is no shit, man. Marine,
yeah, I know, I believe you.
Right,
believe you.
Marine killed, driving the Gator, right? You see it, and you're like, what the fuck, a Gator? What is it doing outside the firm base? Oh, well, they decided they didn't have, I mean, and so it's all that kind of shit. And there was a hallmark of us in and again the system of chicken shit that was put in place where you stood inspections, right? Your the Irish pennants, the MNU, right? Your look, you had to shine your boots and press your uniform. You don't do that anymore. You get up in the morning.
Yeah, let me tell you, embassy school, when I went through that, we couldn't use core frames or brass, or, you know, anodized brass. And so you had white gear, and trying to put that, it was a major, it was a scientific, you know, operation to be able to wear that stuff without, you know, messing up the belt or your trousers or whatever, you know. You're right. You had to do that. And that's attention to detail training, you know.
Right.
As maddening as it could be. We're sleeping underneath our racks in the squad bay because we had gotten underneath them to tighten them up, and you didn't want to mess up your, the way the rack was.
Before the inspection.
Right.
And that's the way we did it. And it just seems to me that when you stop, and again, I think part of it's a cultural thing, and now our culture doesn't do it, and now the people that have come in to the Marine Corps from our culture, they're now at the 05 level, right? Certainly younger than us. And they're the people that are supposed to enforce these rules. Ah, well, you know, it is kind of chicken shit, right? Ah, I don't want to be that guy. And I think it's a problem. And again, I have one son who's a captain, another one that's a lieutenant, just got out. And the lieutenant would tell you the inmates run the asylum now. That if you're the guy who's correcting this shit, you're the asshole.
Yeah. And you always were, but that was no reason not to get promoted. But now there's a command climate. And if you're uncompromising your standards, your command climate will kill you.
Right. Right.
You know what I thought when I saw that letter?
What?
Now, remember back in the 90s, I don't know if it's still that way, but every battalion had to have a big-ass SOP. It's three-page binder that covered it, hundreds of pages. Remember that crap?
Yeah. Yep.
And so when I went to 1-8, when I showed up at 1-8 from AWS, because I'd been at IOC, they made me the S3, and we got moved up and deployed ahead of schedule. And so I was over in Okinawa at S3, and I had to come up with a goddamn SOP for the 8th Marines when I got back, because they were kind of sticklers on that, right? So while I was there, Asad Khan's battalion came over, so I went over and asked him, could I copy his? He said, sure. You know, I got it off of his disc. Right?
You can bet Asad was an ass-bleeding detail to a T.
Oh, yeah. No, you know, it was excellent. Yeah, and when Kennedy showed up, I gave it to Kennedy. He goes, oh, this is awesome. Great. Because they all say, because they're not SOPs, because nobody could follow them all, because you couldn't memorize them, but they all had an admin page on what's a day back in the field, and they looked almost exactly to what Dave did. I mean, right. It seemed to me that was the stand. I don't recall ever doing anything different than that.
Yep.
I mean, but I got out in 2000 like an idiot, so I don't have your all's recent experience. But then again, we're old guys, you know, we're in our 60s, and when we were lieutenants, we had open squad days, and that shit was easy then. Nobody was married in my platoon. Nobody.
Yeah, but again, that shit went out when we were lieutenants, though. I mean, you know, over in Okinawa, we lived in squad bays, and you're right, it was easy. I mean, everybody, you know, it was an easier way to live and certainly to maintain discipline. And then, but when we came back, we were in dope-smoking hotels, man, where, you know, there was privacy, and everybody hated it, but... You know, you learned how to do with it. Blinds at half mast, right? So you could see into rooms. You know, you had to go looking for people, and that drove staff NCOs crazy that they had to go look for people. You know, what the fuck is going on, and where is this idiot?
Yeah, when I was a company commander, I was blessed because my first sergeant was a guy who, he was like an old-time guy, but he knew that you couldn't be like the way... the type of first sergeant leadership he faced in the late 70s, early 80s, not without getting in trouble. So what he did was he had this doll of a pig, and he'd go in the barracks on Saturday. They're over at right by where the theater was, Mac, where we were doing that stuff. And he'd go in there, and he'd put Pig of the Week, and he'd take his kid with him. His name was Larry Rosenfeld. He retired after being Sergeant Major of 8th Marines. And the company gunny I had was a like-minded guy who's Etor's first squad leader in Grenada and Beirut, a guy named Spivey, who was equally as very old-fashioned but also very practical.
Right.
And so consequently, you know, they took care of that. But and they are the type of dudes who reverberated throughout the other first sergeant slash gunny ranks in 2-2 to where I know General Gaskin is our battalion commander. He loved Larry Rosenfeld. He loved Frank Spivey. And he would... And he, you know, it kind of spread. But that was an anomaly, because what you guys are saying is what I saw everywhere else ever since, before and since, you know. That was 95 to 97, you know, and then, other units and stuff like that who weren't, the company commander ends up trying to do the first sergeant's job in some ways, and, you know, it's just a problem. And something else, too, when Chris Bronzy got promoted to, or got, took his company, in 2-4, I was a 3 of the 15th Mews. So I went to San Mateo and I watched Chris get that company from Paul Kennedy. And the place was immaculate. And a little while before that, Lori and I had come because our oldest was also at Mateo in 1-5. And I wasn't out of the car. I was in civilian clothes. But I wasn't out of the car for more than like a minute and a half. I had this gunny in my face. Hey, sir, what are you doing here? How can I help you? It was a company gunny of that company. And so the standard did not die easy, if you know what I mean, you know. But it did die because my other kid, another kid of mine, Tim, who I named after Tim Lynch, not really, before I met Tim, but Tim, he was in 2-4 like 4 years later, and that place was a shithole, man. I go there to find him on the weekend, and the duty doesn't even stand up. I got to tell him, hey, look, you know, I'm a lieutenant colonel. You got to get off your ass. Okay, sir, I'm sorry. Kenny, I think he's in weapons. I go, yeah, he's an 81s dude. Well, I'm not sure where they are. I go, you're the duty NCO? So I just went up there, and there's little torn pieces of cardboard with a guy's name on it, tacked to the wall of the BOQ room. But, and I don't know, I attributed that to the lack of time to get your shit together. You know, they're 6 months out and sometimes 6 months back from Iraq, you know, and so I attribute it to that.
Well,
but
we've been making that excuse forever, right? I mean, shouldn't you be more disciplined if you're going and coming back? Because, look, man, you're going to go be at the pointy end of the spear. So what do you just do, say fuck it to everything else?
And well, of course not. But what happens is this. You start having people get relieved for command climate stuff around that time. I remember James MacArthur got relieved unjustly, you know, for that type of stuff. And so a lot of commanders, they're not being backed up in enforcing discipline.
Right.
And so they don't, because the message is loud and clear. These guys are all there. They're not there for the they have families. You're encouraged to have a family, from the lance corporals to the fucking lieutenant generals. And consequently, you need to spend time with your family. So they do. They leave. And when they leave, it goes to, you get to Lord of the Flies, scenario there. And, the way to get back to this is to not capitalize so much on your family life. Your family life's your goddamn business. And how you deal with that's on you. But if you fuck up this Marine Corps unit, this TO weapon of yours, you're going to get fired. You're not going to get fired because somebody says you're a little bit, you know, you have too many field days, or you don't listen to your staff NCOs, or the sergeant major don't like you, you know, because you don't let them, have as much time for drill and shit like that. You know, spend a lot of time in the field. You're not going to get fired for that. You're going to get fired because your guys can't fucking do good on the McCree. You're going to get fired because they suck when they go to combat. That's where you should get fired. But that's not how it is now.
But what about the tempo? Remember back in the mid-90s, so I go out and deploy as a 3. I come back, I get a company command for like my last 9 months, right? And in that time, I'm gone for a month ahead of them because we're going to go do a CACS. And I actually go out and link up with Furness and hang out with Furness for 2 months. But for that month, before they show up, I'm not there. Right? Then we come back, and Vito and Allen's battalion, they got to do their McCress. So me and all the officers, we get sucked off to go evaluate that goddamn thing, right? Like, I mean, which isn't bad because you're with Vito and Allen, so it's always cool.
Right.
But it's another week where I don't know. I mean, I have a good idea of what's happening in the rear, but I remember my ability to supervise was pretty limited when we were in the rear, and I don't recall being in the rear that often.
That's exactly right. If you remember, when we went to IOC, the whole point of it was we went as students, and we kept it going as instructors. We're going to teach you guys how to train your own unit.
Yeah.
But somehow, when we started doing, we started going to Iraq regularly, and then Afghanistan, the whole ITX thing came in, and you know, there's really not a lot that a lieutenant does with his guys. Everything's kind of taken away. You know, you just kind of you just happen to be the senior guy in the trained unit.
Okay. The 400 ranges used to be where a lieutenant could establish himself as a competent leader, because he had to do it all. I remember when I was the first time I ran 400, I didn't have a friggin' clue, brother. I was
a
second lieutenant.
I mean, that was the whole driving force. You know, us taking guys to Torn on Palms, the second, you know, during OI to support, you know, Operation Iraqi Freedom, was so a lieutenant and his buddies, his fellow IOC guys, they would do range 410 alpha. Then they would do range 400. So by the time they got there with their platoons, they knew how to get the most out of it. You can prepare somebody to get the most out of training, and that's training in itself.
Okay, so what
can do it.
All right, so what does that have to do with discipline? Because let me tell you,
I was wondering if they still have that kind of an up-tempo thing. I don't know.
Even if you have a high op-tempo, you become undisciplined?
No, I don't recall having these issues all the same.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember I had one Marine who I had to send twice out to alcohol rehab. He was a little bit of a problem maker. And I just connected with him on Facebook not a month ago. The guy's a coal miner in Wyoming. He's done great for himself. It was my sole problem. You know, I had one Marine who had a drinking problem, and out of the whole company, that was it.
Wow.
Yeah. I had some other guys that had. So our battalion led the division in drunk driving, right? And the battalion commander, like the most published guy in Gazette history, I'll think of his name in a second. He says, hey, look, I'm going to give everybody any company that does not have a DUI will get a 96. I'll make it retroactive since the beginning of the year. I'm sitting in the staff meeting. I look up. I go, hey, sir, I get 496 hours. And he goes, what are you talking about? I said, I've never had a DUI. He goes, what are you talking about? I've not had a DUI. That's 496 hours that you owe me already. I don't know. I don't know when I can take all this time off. And not a week later, my company clerk gets busted by NIS as being the biggest marijuana seller on campus. Son of a bitch.
There you
bitch.
Go. Now you are.
Yeah, right,
right, now
right from here
it.
To go.
I just
Boom!
Don't.
I couldn't believe it.
So again, here's. So we all know that you know when you're undisciplined, you're going to pay when you go fight. Right, you're going to be less. More people are going to get killed and wounded.
Yeah.
Then, if you're disciplined, and that's just a fucking fact. And so, how does this? So I'm curious about the. Oh, we have a high op tempo, so we're not disciplined.
No, that's not it at all. But what happens? If you have a high op tempo. You got the best way to make sure your men don't do things wrong is to be with them. Be with them when they're on duty. When they're not on duty, you should leave them alone. And what happens is the priorities get messed up, and you have all these people who are married who have kids, and that becomes the priority for a unit. If a guy has complaints from like the FRO and people like that he's in the field too much when they're not on deployment, he's going to get counseled, and if he keeps it up, he's going to get fired. And so consequently, they let discipline go, because the place you exercise discipline is during training. If you're not in actual combat and you're not training, you should let your guys have as much time off as possible. But that shouldn't be that much, because to do our job, you have to train a lot. And so that doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah, but just look, the daily things that
you think we're arguing for the status quo, you're wrong.
No, I'm not. But what I'm saying is this, right? The things that we did that were part of, for instance, formation at 07,
needs to happen.
Right? NCOs coming in, standing around that were brown baggers, coming in with a cup of coffee, guys getting out of the rack, booting them in the ass, looking at the rooms, telling them to clean that. That evidently doesn't happen anymore. First time they see their Marines is at formation. Right? Well, if there is a formation, you know, field days not inspected. Like, how the fuck can it work like this? And so.
I know. When I was talking about how often I was gone as a company commander, I had good lieutenants and good staff NCOs. Well, I didn't have those issues. My bitch was the amount of time that the company commander and often his XO and another good lieutenant were pulled out to do other exercises in the super, you know, like sock X's and all those various things. That used to irritate the shit out of me. That's all I was saying. But we still didn't have any issues with the daily routine. I don't understand how that happened. And the first thing I would ask is, what the hell are they doing at IOC? Because the lieutenants are still, they're not getting pulled. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And, you know, I'm pretty friendly, you know, with the junior officers who come through the advisor training branch, and you know, they're all right off of deployment, and I never really talked to them about their frequency of formations or anything, so I really can't speak to that. I mean, when I go to work later today, I will, but I know you know, the people are accounted for in ATB. There's 27 total, and we know where they're at. You know, they know where they're at. It's the exact same TO that we started back in 2006. But I just don't know how widespread what you're talking about is, Mac. I know it's a disaster if it's more than 25%, you know?
Right.
Because that type of shit spreads. Well, you know, these guys, they get off early and shit. I have to tell you, one of my kids was in Saad Khan's battalion, who we talked about a little bit.
You guys have referred to him now three times. Right. Can you just give a little bit of an introduction to him?
I'll give what I know. He's a guy who's his parents are from Pakistan. And he spoke, I think he spoke Urdu. He speaks Urdu and maybe even Pashtun. And he was a very hard guy. He's from Connecticut. Real hard guy and very competent. And he was the CO of 1st Battalion, 6th Marines from 2003 to 2005, I think. And he went to Afghanistan as the GCE for the 22nd MU under the command of now General Max something. I should know him because he was a company commander briefly in the battalion I was in as a second lieutenant. But anyway, Assad was very hard. He was known for being very exacting. And my kid used to tell me, my kid assumed that you did field day out the ass on Thursday till your ass bled. You got off on Friday, but you had to be back Sunday night. That's what was Assad's, everybody had to be accounted for Sunday night, so when they kicked off training on Monday, it was good to go. And Assad got relieved. He had a full term as a battalion commander. Took 1-6 to Afghanistan. They did a great job. He was pretty much loved by the enlisted guys and junior NCOs, and uniformly not liked by the staff NCOs and officers. And that's what I know about Assad.
All right, now go ahead.
Assad Khan was the one who reopened the Kabul embassy in 2001. I wrote about that, as a matter of fact, this week, and I want to talk about that, but I don't want to veer off from what we're talking about earlier.
Well, let me just tell you, somebody just sent me a link that this story just made military.com. General mandates daily routine after seeing sloppy, unshaven Marines.
Good to go. Good for Dave. Good for John Furness.
Well, you know, let me just tell you what the link that has to be forged, right? Is the fairy dust principle. Nobody fairy dust you on the flight over to go play You Bet Your Life to unfuck your ass. Right? There is not a little winged thing that flies around the fuselage of a chartered trans world, whatever the fuck airlines were on, right? And just sprinkles everybody with pixie dust. Now we're all going to know how to obey orders. We're all going to know how to be there on time. We're all going to know how to keep our weapons clean. We're all going to stop taking shortcuts and do what the fuck we're supposed to do. There is no such animal. And if people don't see the linkage between the way you live in garrison in wherever the fuck you live and the way you fight in war, then come to me and I'll lay out 19 different cases for you of people that should be alive that are fucking dead forever because they didn't have their fucking ass and their brain wired together.
Yeah. Hey, Mac, every generation has guys who could tell that story. Okay. I have to tell you, this isn't a new thing. When I first came to the Marine Corps in 75, once I got out of boot camp, we fucking sucked. We sucked bad. And I didn't see real discipline until after. I was in the embassy in Tehran.
Right.
Our first guy got fired for just the shit that General Furness is talking about in 2nd Marine Division as far as it related to us. There's only 17 of us. The guy we had after him, he said just what you're saying, about this stuff's going to relate to performance and ultimately to your survival if you stay in the Marine Corps long enough to be in a conflict. And he, the exact same thing, shaving, inspections, room inspections, and then react drills, and it led to us doing operational stuff, and he was outstanding to the point where he's the reason I reenlisted, because I was disappointed in the Marine Corps when I first came in, once I got out of boot camp. And this guy, I said, there's a place in the Marine Corps, and he would say, you got to make your little part of it good. You make your little part of it good, and you find guys, and they'll remember you did that, and they'll go on from there, and they'll make their part of it good. And that's what you got to do. It doesn't work to try and do it from the general level. When he gets it to where he's doing it like that, it's like it's it's almost impossible. Right. You got to do things to make it, to make people know you're serious. I have to tell you, the guys who did that in my memory, first was General Wilson, then was General Barrow, and then the pace that they set, the example that they pushed, took us through the 80s. It didn't hurt that we had Ronald Reagan, who was giving us more money than we ever had before, but that made us the force that was, to me, the best we ever were was that 1991 Desert Storm. And then from there, it took a long time to break down that good force through the 90s and stuff like that, through a lot of neglect, a lot of stupid, issues, thinking the United States military is a social experiment, test tube. It took a long time for stuff to really break us down, but we're getting there now.
Any doubt in your mind?
Yeah.
Any doubt in your mind, Jeff?
No.
All right.
No.
All right. Now, again, I watched my youngest lieutenant, right? In the 1st Marine Division, 3rd Battalion, 5th Marines. I watched him for 3 fucking years, listened to him tell me stories. And I was like, you're bullshit. And he just looked at me, and he's like, Dad, what you know as Marine Corps doesn't exist where I live anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, Timmy, your thoughts?
I remember when I was an enlisted, when I was a corpsman in Bethesda, if you stood in the communal head there at the BEQ, you'd be high. I mean, it was that much dope smoke in that friggin' place.
Right.
24-7. And that never stopped until, what was it, 83 when they started the piss testing?
Yeah.
83. And that was precipitated by the Kitty Hawk accident where these pilots crashed, on the trainer.
Right. Here's what people are saying. I hear the same thing now. You can't. This is the way the young guys are. We got to let them grow their hair longer. Right. They're from a different.
Exactly.
Their parents are different. It's bullshit. You come in the Marine Corps.
Every person that was in there that was killed in that Kitty Hawk accident, to include the officers, the pilots, all of them tested positive for THC. And that's when the commandant says, "You know what? We're going to test and we're going to throw people out." And then the Navy said they'd go with it because the commandant led that one. And that's when things changed, because I remember guys that I worked with, they had to make the decision. Okay, am I staying or am I going to go and smoke dope?
You're saying what Mac is saying. What really ultimately is a urine analysis? It's the fucking inspection. It's an inspection of what you've been doing. And once you stop doing that, in any way, whether it's a urine analysis or inspection of the fucking barracks, if you don't inspect it, you can't expect it.
You know,
when Bethesda started that, and then they decided to try to become a military hospital and have like an inspection of all the staff, and my friggin' uniform, because I'd just come from boot camp the year before, my uniform was getting, every week when they had a different section of inspections, it was getting changed from first class to second class. Guys were borrowing that thing. It must have been tailored 15 times. Because nobody even had a uniform back then. I mean,
I remember that. Man, you guys went through fucking clothes. It's like, what outfit is a Navy in now?
who knows? I mean, but I think at least now they have a standard uniform. But back then it was loosey goosey. It was not like being in the military at all.
I remember the black bus driver thing. It went from Cracker Jacks to black bus driver thing for a while. Black, jacket and shit. Yeah. And then they went back to Cracker Jacks, which is a good uniform.
Right. Yeah. And I was right in the middle of that. Right.
Yeah.
Then they went away from then because the chicks look horrible in them because of their hips and whatnot.
So they look
awful on women. They look great on them.
Dress up like those twin pink broads. That's what they should do.
I wouldn't know about that.
Joke. That's a joke.
Or
he passed me that in a note. I didn't think of it.
Neller was my battalion commander, and he called me in his office one day, and he looks at me and he says, "Why are your readiness numbers so much higher than everybody else's?" And I said, "Because I inspect every Friday when I'm not in the field." He said, "What?" I said, "I inspect every Friday when I'm not in the field." He said, What do you inspect?" Right, so in a light armored reconnaissance company, right, at the time. So I said, I inspect the vehicles. I pull things off the daily, weekly, and monthly checklist to inspect. So, and then the scouts, they lay their shit out, and we do 782 gear and weapons. and then I go, and then we inspect the maintenance bays. He said, every Friday. I said, yeah. And we start at 08, and so it's me, the first sergeant, the gunny, and the XO. We're the inspecting officers. Lieutenants are getting inspected. Everybody else getting inspected. And I said, and we're normally done by 1300, and if you pass, we sound fucking libo. So their hard work is linked to getting the fuck out of 29 Palms by 1300 on Friday, which means you're in Laughlin or Los Angeles or Vegas by 5 o'clock.
Right.
Right? And so that's I don't know if that's old style Marine Corps, but linking
it is.
Hard work.
It's up there right now, and you know them.
Discipline,
you know,
hard work, and libo, having a good time, you're speaking the language of Marines. And they'll fucking do whatever you want to, but I don't know how it exists when you don't have to show up for formation, when you don't have to do shit to your uniform, when you don't have a field day, when you can do whatever the fuck you want to your room, right? I don't
appreciate as much.
And right. You don't get inspected. Dave told a story, the first CG's inspection he fucking did. I want to say it was a company in 10th Marines, I'm not sure, so I don't want to throw him under the bus. So, not a battery, but a company. But so, he steps in front of the first guy and he asks this question, right? Have you been inspected? Answer, no, sir. Next question. So nobody's inspected you before me? No, sir. Like, are you fucking kidding me?
I know, insane, man.
That is, who thinks that? Okay, and then I don't know if he went through the inspection, but if, God forbid I would ever be the CG, but if I just stopped the thing. This, yeah. I'm not doing this. You fail. All right? You fucking fail.
And well, we heard some appalling things when we were there last week before, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just awful.
So, but again, it's those continuing actions, right?
Yeah.
And discipline is an ongoing thing that is the lifeblood, especially of a force that says, hey, we're ready when nobody else is.
Right.
Call on us. You got to be disciplined. And so, I the question is, is this just, you know, Dave Furness, VMI guy overreacting? And what you heard junior Marine say, oh, like what, he didn't get saluted at the PX, so now he's pissed, right? So the answer is
Mac, let me ask you a question, Mac.
Yeah.
When you described what you did as a company commander in 3rd LAR, I knew a guy later on the eve of OIF-1 who was a company commander in LAR just like you, and he did exactly what you're talking about. And put those guys in the field a lot because when he took over the company, the standards and their marksmanship for the chain gun, you know, for the main gun on the LAVs was not good. And I think you know who I'm talking about because he got fired, and he got fired by a guy who we were talking about who's now a general officer. And I don't want to mention his name. I don't want to put anybody out there in the street, but he was doing the same stuff. And the reason what got him skyline was the wives bitched about the guys being gone all the time, and the sergeant major complained because he asked to go out of the field to do something. But he was doing exactly what you were doing in exactly that unit. I don't know which letter company he had.
Right.
But, you know, he was the 7th Marines guy after that. He became a staff guy for the 7th Marines. He was in LIF-1. I know General Mattis liked the guy, but he was blackballed. First by the battalion commander and the MEF commander, General Conway, had remembered something unpleasant about the guy from when he was in the basic school, right before he left. That's the type of shit, you know, that I don't know if that didn't help him once he got in trouble, but he got in trouble for doing exactly what you said. And what happens is most guys are like those company commanders you talk about who never mention the fact that you frauded that picture you had of General Neller on your wall. You know, where you say, I wrote up this to my best company commander and stuff, and you wrote down a picture of him. And so it's not that they're abject cowards, but they're saying, I got to survive in this thing long enough to take care of my family. This is their mentality. Or they say to themselves, well, I just got to put up with this. I got to put up with A so that I can ultimately get to do B. That's what they tell themselves. And that's an exacerbator. You got a professional force. Everybody wants to make it to their 20 or become a general officer. And the same thing, you know, for the staff and COs. They want to get that star of a sergeant major or bomb of the master guns or whatever.
I don't know.
Shaking a tree ain't a way to do that. Now, I say that they should do that anyway, but you got to not – and that's a great thing with General Neller. If you disagree with General Neller, he's not going to end your life. You know what I mean? He'll accept you got a different opinion. But a lot of other people aren't that way, you know? That's part of it out there.
So if we do that, then you're going to skyline yourself, so fuck it, I ain't doing it. I ain't going to go there. I ain't going to...
Unless you're in the fucking 2nd Marine Division in 2019, then you're going to get your just desserts,
right.
I think.
Right.
Because I don't think that CG is going to let an injustice happen at any level that he hears about. So if you're a hard ass and you're in the place to be a 2nd Mar Div right now.
Right? Hold on, let me read you an email. This conversation is long overdue. I am currently in the Marine Corps. I'm a staff non-commissioned officer. And when you try to enforce standards, all you get is blowback from other leaders and that you're being too hard and unreasonable. And then the Marines come in and complain.
Right.
You enforce standards at the peril of your own existence. This conversation is long overdue. I just want to thank General Furness for kicking this thing off because it should be a conversation that we have across the Marine Corps, not simply in the 2nd Division. I hope that it comes to my division at some point soon because the shit I see at Camp Pendleton is enough to make you want to vomit.
Yeah.
Semper Fidelis.
Oh, my. If I do not see a little expansion in the post-traumatic warning presentation in the near future.
No. It's already,
I'm not sensing a powerful force inside me on this topic, because I don't even know what the hell you guys are talking about. That was not the record that we experienced as coming
yes,
great officer.
Yes, you do, Timmy.
No. I probably do. But, I mean, as a coming great officer, was it? We had problems, but not those problems.
Right.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. You know we're turning into like three Charlotte spiders weaving some general in our spider web for Dave Furness. So it's good though.
But the thing about Dave is our advantages is we all know him very well. And we know that the last thing in the world he wants to be dicking around with is dictating a daily schedule to his friggin' mates. He's much more interested in talking about how to maneuver people in a place of advantage so he can kill him. And that's what he likes to talk about, right?
Yep.
And so now he's consumed with this kind of micromanagement bullshit. I know Dave. I mean, we all know that this isn't what he wants to do, but it's what he's got to do, and it's a damn shame.
No. I disagree with you. It's not a shame because the Marine Corps needs this, and it's needed it for a while. And we've all been, you know, not we've all been, but people that have been in position of authority, I think very much what Jeff said. Like, do I really want to go there? And because, again, here's that thing hasn't even been out for a day, right? Already, stories are being written about it, right? Military.com, general mandates, quote, daily routine after seeing sloppy, unshaven Marines. So, trust me, that will be not be the last story that gets written about Marine general concerned about undisciplined Marines. Because those words are not supposed to go together. Undisciplined and Marine. Yet
wouldn't Eric Smith dealing with this last year?
He was dealing with the hazing.
Hazing, yeah. And the letter, yeah. the email that he wrote essentially called this shit out, which is, hey, look, I set a policy and I feel like I had just a bunch of Lance Corporals flip me the bird. And that turd essentially says that turd doesn't, you know, that dog doesn't hunt.
Oh, yeah, no, that's right. Yeah, I remember it now, yeah.
Right, because up is still up in this son of a bitch, and down is still down. And down is the direction of the floor, no matter what anybody else fucking tries to convince you of.
Right.
And,
but
you know, he got wired brushed for that.
But he got, that's what I was going to say. He caught some heat for that, too.
Undue command influence because a couple of those Marines were being court-martialed.
Oh.
Yeah, so that's what that was. That's what that is. But you know what, again, the issue, though, ultimately, and don't let anybody confuse it, all right, it is not chicken shit, you know, bullshit around Garrison or not being saluted in the parking lot. It's none of that. It is a trend of disgusting, undisciplined, unmarine-like behavior that has become so pervasive across the Marine Corps that it has got the attention of some of the highest-ranking officers in the Marine Corps.
Right.
And make no mistake, it is directly translatable to how we train and ultimately how we fight. And I just go back to this. The heartbreaking number of 19 right? Don't put your seatbelt on, and you should have got a broken ankle, or at worst, a crushed ankle, as an ID went off under your MATV. But instead, what you got was you got your sternum bounced off the steering column, and the force of that blow combined with the angle of your sappy plate ripped your aorta out of your heart, and you bled to death. Now, I hope that whoever's family never knows the truth and believes that, you know, they died, you know, a hero's death in combat against the enemy. I hope they never find out, because the truth is not, if it was only heartbreaking, that would be okay. It's heart crushing, right? Didn't put a seatbelt on? What?
Right. Fuck. Yeah, that's horrible.
Yeah. Yeah, and then the same thing with, like, we wanted to take all that gee dunk down to our fucking patrol base, right? So we drove the Gator, and he's dead. And then for the lack of an ADRAC, right? Contact enemy. Instead of saying 11 o'clock at 1,100 meters, he just stops right there. That's not an ADRAC. Right,
yeah.
ADRAC is alert, direction, distance, range, whatever, and control. That, you know, mm-hmm. So it's the way we
assignment.
Target something.
It's
yeah.
Assignment
and control. So doesn't say that, right? The gunner now spins to 9 o'clock because there was no direction given, and he says identified, and then the vehicle commander says fire if they're enemy, and he hears fire and he shoots and he kills another Marine, which happens to be one of his best friends. And that's, again, these are like real world no shit. That's what you get when you're not fucking disciplined. And it starts with Irish penance, waxing concrete, raking dirt, painting rocks, and all the chicken shit that we learned. And if you stop doing that, and now we'll decide what's important, because you don't fucking know.
Yeah.
Good luck with
you
that.
You know, the first thing I asked Paul when I finally ran into him in Afghanistan, and
Paul,
David,
Paul
and Dave, and you, Jeff, everyone, the first thing I asked you is, okay, so what about the shitbirds? Do they turn out that they're okay in combat, or what? Because I didn't know.
No.
We always had argued this, right?
Yeah.
And I remember Paul goes, he goes, there are some guys who fold you didn't expect to fold, and there's guys that step up you didn't expect to step up, but
right.
A shitbird's a shitbird, and he's going to get people killed.
Yeah,
well, that's all you said.
The guys who, like, it's like sometimes the libo risks turn out to be real good. But
right.
A guy who don't show up on time is a guy who's not going to show up on time when it counts.
No, and I didn't know. I remember that's the first thing I asked all of you guys. And I was fascinated by the uniformity of your response. And I'm just saying that to give an endorsement from a peacetime Marine guy, because I'm not familiar with what's happening today. To me, I don't know. What the hell are you doing if you're not doing the daily routine?
Well, you know, and I'd draw a line between, because we all, there are people that have, quote unquote, a lot of personality. Right, that join the Marine Corps, and they're constantly getting in trouble for some shit.
Right.
But they're good Marines, right? But I would draw a line between that and the way a unit operates, right? The discipline, do you right?
Yeah, that's huge. That's a big difference,
right? Right. I mean, because you can have guys who are they're constantly in trouble, and they're you know, alcohol-related event. But I'll tell you what, you have a good unit, and they're a part of that unit, and they can perform well, but it's what you see with that unit, right? The way they either live by the rules. And I just played an interview yesterday by a guy named R.V. Bergen. He wrote a book called Islands of the Damned, A Marine in the Pacific. And he was Sledge's section leader, mortar section leader.
Oh, wow.
Right? And it was his book that was published in 2010, and Sledge's book and then Robert Leckie's book that formed much of the basis of the...
Yeah, Robert Leckie's book was from the 60s.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Sledge is from the 80s, and then this book published in 2010. But he talks about, I want to say, his platoon commander. And he talked about he enforced every rule. When you went to formation, it said that your dungarees were supposed to be buttoned, you know, to the top. That's how it was. When your mortar was supposed to be like this, that's how it was. And he said he was one of the best officers that I ever served under, because we knew what he expected, and he expected us to do it by the book. And that's the standard he held us to. And if you hold, and this is, look, this is not a Marine issue, okay? This is not an individual Marine issue, because Marines are like clay. They will become, right, whatever you fashion them to be. If you tell them they're going to be inspected, if you tell them they're going to field day, if you tell them, you know, we're going to hold a uniform and weapons inspection on Friday, trust me, they'll do what you tell them to do. This is
a, to treat everybody the same, too.
This is, yeah, this is a leadership issue. People that come from a culture that doesn't do discipline anymore, now they've got to be the enforcers of discipline, and we're reluctant to do that, just as a culture. And I'll tell you what, I'm glad that this discussion, if you can't tell, is going on, because it needs to go on.
Yeah, for sure. I'll tell you, it happens. We've had bad times through the history of the Marine Corps, and you know, this is one of them. And usually it comes after conflicts on the wane. Happened after Vietnam, and that's happening now, you know. Usually, like, what was so noticed about the World War II, because they just shit-canned everybody. You barely had two regiments, you know what I mean? But that was the thing that you noticed. But, yeah, for sure. Hey, listen, if you're talking about, I was talking to Bob Coates yesterday, and he recommends another book, like you just were talking, Matt, called On Desperate Ground. It's about the 1950 from Incheon to through the Chosen Frozen on Desperate Ground.
You mean the Frozen Chosen?
Yeah. Through the Chosen Reservoir campaign.
Wow. Bob Coates is a hard man. That's yeah. You have to be, give him my best next time you see him.
Yeah. We talked about it. He said, yeah, I remember. He goes, he knows about it. He remembered you from 1-9.
We were 1-9 together. He was a company commander in Java.
I can't remember last week.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Yeah. He said you were the XO of one of the other rifle companies.
Oh, well, thank you.
Wow, he remembered.
There you go. Yeah. How about that?
You guys know.
That Sergeant Bergen guy, talk about laconic. You want to talk about a stereotypical, laconic, old friggin' warrior guy. I was damn interested in listening to him.
He was, you know, soft spoken, but hard, you know, hard as woodpecker lips, you know, in terms of, you know, the things that he saw. He talked about, you know, the Marines he'd seen bayoneted 60 times, you know, genitals cut off, face disfigured, you know, why he still used the term Japs after, you know, after 70 years. And he said, they'll always be Japs. He said, I don't have anything against the Japanese people. I've been there. But if we're going to talk about the Jap soldier, that's what he is. You know, he had no regard for human life. And so, I mean, really interesting, though, talking about, you know, Cape Gloucester, you know, and then Peleliu.
He's a 1st Division guy for sure.
He's Kilo 3-5. So interesting. Somebody sent me an email. Corporal Brown, if you listen to an interview I did with Sergeant Major Brian Zikafus, who's now the Sergeant Major of Southcom, he talks about wanting to leave a shitbird, who he thought was a shitbird, back from when he was a battalion sergeant major. His name is Lance Corporal Brown, and Brown comes to see him because. He's not, Zikafu says, Brown's not going. So, you know, Brown comes to see him, and he tells him to go away. He comes back the second time, and he's got tears in his eyes. He said, you got to let me go. I've got to go with my guys. And he said, look, Brown, all you've been is a pain in my ass. You don't rate to go, but I'll talk to your company commander and your first sergeant, and I'll see what they say. Well, they said they'll take him. So fast forward, they're in Fallujah. They're out doing battlefield circulations, introducing the CO, and boom, firefight starts. They roll to it. They dismount. They're moving up. Marine's been killed, shot in the face, so Zikafus didn't know who it was. As he's moving by, he stops the corpsman. He says, who is that? He says, sir, that's Lance Corporal Brown. And, he said he died running to, you know, as part of a QRF to try to help. And he got emotional. I've never seen Sergeant Major Z do that. And he said, you know, he said, it's had a huge impact on my life. He said, when you come see me, you know, and I'm your Sergeant Major, you have my undivided attention. And, you know, he said, look, nobody joins this thing to be bad. I mean, you don't join the Marine Corps to be bad. And our job is to push them and show them a better way and give them better and give them more.
Right. And absolutely. So, make it easier for them to do the right thing than the wrong thing.
Yeah, and so no, I think I don't even know. Dave's correcting a problem trying to correct a problem in the 2nd Marine Division, but this is a discussion that the Marine Corps, you know, writ large needs to have.
Yeah, like 1975 when we got General Wilson. He got everybody, and he said, I'm going to start firing people if I don't see an improvement. And he did. And same thing with General Barrow. And it was hard because, man, the dope was in the culture, the dope and the fucking shitbirdism. They wanted to give guys hairnets in the Marine Corps. It was awful. And I went away to embassy duty, and I came back. It was way better, though you could still say it was bad. You know?
Oh, yeah, and in the midst of that, during the Carter administration, Roseanne Carter didn't like seeing uniforms all over D.C.,
So
they only allowed to wear their uniform on Thursdays, one day a week if you worked up in the D.C. area, like headquarters, Marine Corps, someplace like that, had to wear a coat and tie.
What?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It got a lot better when President Reagan obviously took over. Right. I got one story to tell you about that.
Yeah, yeah. The military, when I joined, it was because I had literally nothing else to do. I didn't look upon it as, hey, geez, I've passed a screening. I'm one of the lucky few that can join the military. I was like, shit, I don't know what else I'm going to do. And so I joined the military. I'm the exact opposite of Jeff. I was an unmotivated recruit. But
I don't believe you, man.
The SEAL thing intrigued me, though. I thought the SEAL thing would make up for having joined.
I believe you. That's why old Doc Lynch joined the Navy.
When the Marines were in Beirut,
3-8 was in Beirut, right? And the Marines from Lima Company made this. You always got these guys who are good with arts and crafts and shit.
Right.
This kid made a Christmas card of the Marines putting up a cedar tree in the same pose that they raised the flag, the second flag raising Iwo Jima that's famous. And so they made a Christmas card and they sent it to General Barrow saying, sir, to you from your Marines in Beirut, and they're putting up the cedar trees if they're riding Lebanon, right? So he's proud as shit, man. He's getting ready to leave, you know, being commandant. He's walking around showing everybody. He sees he's in there seeing the president. He goes, Mr. President, I want to show you something we got from our Marines in Lebanon. So Reagan looks at the card. He takes it in his hands. He looks at it. His eyes full of tears. He puts it in his fucking jacket. And he says, this is the best president I've ever had as president of the United States. And Barrow's like appalled, right? He goes back to the Navy Annex where headquarters Marine Corps was. He's like, I want another goddamn birthday card. The president stole my birthday card. So they go back to the Marines. I guess some 6th Fleet officer goes, or 7th, yeah, 6th Fleet officer goes, and he's like, hey, we want to know who made that card. Well, right away, the fucking jarheads think they're in trouble. They fucking clam up. And so they won't say anything. It gets desperate. Finally, the officer goes, can I talk to the company? He goes, look, man. The president stole General Barrow's card. He wants another one. And they're like, oh, all right, sir. And they made him another one, gave it to him. I think it's in the Marine Corps Museum somewhere.
That's great hysterical.
Story. Yeah.
Interesting. Interesting stuff. Let me read you another email. I saw this yesterday on Terminal Lance, and the comments are pretty hilarious. But you all make it sound very different. Mac, your numbers are chilling. Can you imagine if that was your kid? How heartbroken you would be, and I think your term, heart crushed, is appropriate. We expect the Marine Corps to be disciplined. We don't expect Marines to get killed for being undisciplined. That's simply un-Marine-like. If this is where it has to start, then so be it. I can't fathom a Marine Corps without the structure that you all live through and that I live through. If that's not the case, God help anybody who fights in the future.
Right.
Yeah, but that structure came in the 80s with a hard course correction
in the
institution of standards by some general officers who just weren't going to put up with the crap anymore. And we were very fortunate to live through that because, when Jeff and I joined, it was not a happy place to be in the U.S. military. By the mid-80s, it was like the place to be, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember watching all these things start happening, you know? Guys like Bob Coates, who was just a captain back then, tremendously influential in the reconnaissance community and whatnot. Because they were professionals. They read. They took this shit seriously. I've never even heard of a discipline problem in Coates' company. Holy shit, he's a hard guy.
Let me ask you this: is this something that naturally comes after a conflict, because when you have people that have fought, it's like, hey, man, we know the rules, right? You don't need to play chicken shit Marine Corps with us. We know what the hell we're doing. Is this a natural ebb and flow? Because let me tell you, the Marine Corps was a pretty tough place in the early to mid-60s, right? After Korea, right? It's a pretty buttoned-down organization, right? And it, to me, I always think that's funny because, you know, and there's a couple videos. There's a video that I show in Post-Traumatic Winning, and it's it shows Marines on the beach, and God only knows what island it is. But there's one dude standing off to the right side in the video, and he's got this bush of hair on him. He's got no shirt on, and he's smoking a cigarette, right? And you can tell he's talking shit about something. And every time I see him, it makes me laugh, and I wonder, how the hell did we come out of World War II shaving our heads, everybody uniform? Because no, you can't find two uniforms that are the same in World War II, let alone...
Well, you're talking Guadalcanal or someplace like that. They're on their ass, man.
No, no, no. It's not Guadalcanal. I can tell you that.
Like,
you
know, Peru or something?
Well, I mean, but you look at Marines all over. I mean, they had long hair. They were in their, you know, you see them in their portraits in Hollywood or Laguna Beach, and they've got their, you know, their cover cocked off to the side and their bouffant going on. And then you see in their uniforms in combat, there, you see every different permutation of uniforms. So to me, it makes me laugh. All of a sudden we shaved our heads and we were all uniform, but that's what we were. And then you have Vietnam, and then you have post-Vietnam, right? In that there's, I don't know, this, we've been to war, we don't need to do this shit anymore. And is this a natural ebb and flow of...
I have to tell you, Mac, I think in the old days, when the war was over, the services shrunk.
Right.
But in Vietnam, it didn't shrink because we still had the Soviet Union, people on the other side of the Iron Curtain. It didn't really shrink. And so you still had this big, huge standing military. And so because they did away with the draft, you had to keep the thing populated, and your average mediocre person, I shouldn't say mediocre, but your average person thinks the way to get people in is to be nice to them. And so you had that crap. And then the horror of horrors in the early 70s, they started post, you know, last Marine unit out of Vietnam was 3-1 in May of 71. Besides, like, Anglico and advisors and stuff like that, and some air guys. And I think they started seeing, they were appalled at the lack of discipline, the race problems, the problems that are a reflection of society, and no real rigor put to the type of people we're bringing in, you know. And so, consequently, we had a huge fucking problem in the 70s. And,
but,
we had a heroic commandant, two heroic commandants in a row, Wilson and Barrow. It wasn't easy, man. It took them 5 years to clean that shit up.
Right.
And we also had, propelling us as a tailwind, a no shit genuine military debacle in that Desert One. I mean, because everybody participated in that thing because that's the way the military's always been. Everybody had to get a piece, and that thing was such a clusterfuck, such an unprofessional goat rope. That when Reagan came in, he was able to point to this and say, yeah, we need to kind of like fix the military because this is not acceptable. And so you had that emphasis behind you, and a Congress that, having looked at the Desert One thing, said, yeah, you know, we got to get serious about having a legitimate military.
Yeah.
And so what's the disaster that's going to make all of a sudden everybody realize that maybe we should go back and have another course correction? That's what I'd be afraid of because before it was Korea. I mean, if it hadn't been for the Marines calling up combat tested reservists and having at least a couple of battalions that could get in to scrape quick, if it hadn't been for the Marines, we would have got our ass kicked.
Absolutely right. Because a lot, you had those guys, and then you had a shitload of Marines in the 1st Marine Division, and everyone went to boot camp, like Hector Caffaretta, Honor went.
Yeah, there are plenty of them that had never even been to boot camp. That's unbelievable. But that was a disaster that kind of saved us the first time. Then you've got the desert one, which wasn't a gigantic casualty wise, prestige wise, it was catastrophic.
I think we're approaching something here. The idea being that you don't have to just accept the fact that young people are different, and so consequently we're going to have to, you know, pay homage to that. Discipline's discipline. Like you were saying, Mac, hey, you got to do it. These things will keep you alive, and right. It means something to be a Marine. It means more than just putting a uniform on and you know, breathing that air for 4 years. It means, you know, you got to do stuff, and it's not stuff that the rest of society does. Like I said, I heard the same horse shit in the 70s, late 70s. Oh, this is the way they are now. You just got to deal with it. Oh, yes. Fuck that. You know, doing the right thing in combat is the same at all times. And this discipline thing we're talking about mitigates against that. And so we got to fix it. And it doesn't surprise me that former ISC instructor, dude, Jay Furness, is leading the fucking charge on this at all.
It's not surprising, but it's not what he wants to do. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, no.
It's a damn, but, that's but, I mean, I guess it is. I guess we're fortunate. But what the hell, man?
And Joe Barrow, fucking hero in Korea, you know, in the Chosin Reservoir, and then he does Dewey Canyon, like one of the really highly effective ways to impede the North Vietnamese from flowing into South Vietnam. He probably didn't want to fuck around with the piss tests and throwing the turds out either, but it was necessary to save the Corps, for sure.
Yeah, you know what? It's, to me, having two sons and talking to them and watching their observations, right, and then them challenging me. Oh, it was this way. And Patrick and I got into it wasn't an argument one night, but we were talking about hazing, and I said, yeah, that shit did go on when I was a lieutenant. And he said, bullshit. He said, it's always gone on. I said, no. Let me just tell you, my platoon sergeant didn't graduate from high school. He was going back. I think he graduated from the ninth grade, right? So right. He was borderline illiterate, okay? But he was about 5'11" and about 240 pounds. And when he told you to do something, you fucking did it. Because if you didn't do it, he was going to yoke your shit up. And back then, the staff NCOs were pissed because there was an Almar that came out that said, hey, if you assign somebody EPD, right, and classic EPD back then was go in the back, right, and dig a fighting position by regulation with a grenade sump, with a parapet, the whole fucking 9 yards. So the Almar said you had to go periodically check on them if you assigned that to them. And the staff NCOs were like, what the fuck? Like, what have we become? Now we got to babysit their dumb asses? You know? And they were like outraged that they would have to check on these shitheads after they assigned them to do something. But that was still up. They ruled the roost with an iron fist, whether you were in squad bays or in dope smoking hotels, as they called them. And so it didn't happen. You know? And, you know, we've emasculated, you know, our staff NCOs and our NCOs, right? You stick your foot up somebody's ass, 50-50 chance he's walking in the first sergeant and say, hey, he hazed me. He called me a shithead.
Yeah. I got a perspective of this because I was enlisted. I was a gunny when I got commissioned. And there was hazing, especially when I got to recon. And it's not an unusual thing. There's always been. Not always everywhere. I'll tell you why guys haze. They haze because they feel like they're not being challenged enough. That's why they do it. And so if you're in a unit that doesn't feel like you're fulfilling the, you know, the expectations, there will be hazing. And that's one thing. I have four of my boys in the Marine Corps during the war here, two stepsons and two sons from my first wife. And they say a lot of the same stuff your guys are saying, Mac. But normally they don't want to hurt my feelings because I'm like, hey, don't you guys think you might want to reenlist? I mean, you got some expertise here. You know, three of them were grunts, and one of them was, 1391. And they're like, hey, that's your thing. I did my thing during the war. I'm out. And, you know, I can't really, but they have a lot of, you know, they have a lot of valid complaints about, you know, it sucks when you're back in the rear because, you know, no one's really paying attention. And it's not until you start working up to go again. And you feel like a Marine when you're actually over there in Iraq or Afghanistan, you know? So it's just that's the perspective I got to it. And then as far as the hazing thing goes, like I said, I remember I was in the first recon, they come up to me, I just was there a month. Sergeant Kenny, have you met Bill? And I go, no, who's he? Well, you got it. There's a Quonset hut. We're at Talega there in the northern part of Camp Pelham. You run in that door of that Quonset hut, and everyone who's already met Bill and the company is in there, and they beat the shit out of you in a gauntlet until you get to the other side. And that was just one of many. And I have to tell you, I never engineered a Bill meeting for anybody else. It's just not me. But it never occurred to me to like press charges or anything like that, you know? Like getting your wings and everything that you earn on your chest, they pounded it into you. And I asked guys, like guys from Vietnam, guys who are recon guys in Vietnam, did they pound the shit in your chest then? They're like, fuck no, we were too busy going to combat. That shit didn't start till after we left. You know? So the hazing thing is that it's a function of people not feeling that they're being pushed enough. They're not earning it, you know?
Interesting. Interesting. The first time I saw, I said this before, but, you know, the first time I saw blood striping,
yeah,
was at a company formation. They did in front of God and everybody. And you had the senior staff NCO standing there, and if some idiot took his knee back, right, and brought it from left field,
he'd stop him, yeah.
Yeah, they were like, hey, come here, idiot. What are you doing? You know,
right.
And so, I mean, we had, I mean, those initiations, whatever you want to call them, and they were all done in public, you know, and they were all kind of, I mean, they were all kind of a little bit fun, right? And again, until the idiots get a hold of them, and then that's when you have stupid shit. That's why we don't have the showback ceremony anymore, right?
Right. So. That's right. The last time I met Bill was those rental fuckers last week.
Anyway, there's a couple more emails and question. I've been listening to this now. What do you think will be the quote-unquote end state of all of this? Do you think it will raise the consciousness of Marines relative to discipline, or do you think this will be just a rock thrown into a lake, it'll make a ripple, and then go away? Interesting. You think it's a... what do you think, Timmy? Get your crystal ball out. What do you think?
Well, I think I've already predicted when it's going to change. It's going to change when they have some kind of debacle that forces change. Because from what you're describing to me, this is a little bit too far gone for one lone division commander to tackle. He can maybe initiate some course corrective actions, or maybe the new commandant will champion that particular thing. I don't know,
right.
but man, it's not it does not sound like something that is going to shift anytime soon or easily.
Well, you know, and we know historically that the only time institutions tend to take substantial corrective action is after failure. They don't course correct on their own. It's the exceptional organization that can look inward and say, all right, we've got to change this. And then turn to, and because again, you know, like Jeff has said, like when you listen to all the whiny shit that goes on, right, and guys get relief for that, they pay attention. Like, all right, I can't, not only can I not use, you know, terms like fag and pussy and all that anymore. Okay, I get that, right? But taking them to the field and pushing them hard, that gets me unpopular, and that gets me relieved too. That's crazy.
Right.
So the institution's got to grow up a little bit. So I, you know, again, it's the atypical, but that's what General Furness is doing. He's saying, hey, look, I'm not having it anymore, to the point where I'm going to throw this thing up in the air, and I'm going to skyline us because I think it's that significant. And I will tell you this, he could do a lot of things with that division. To include, take it anywhere and do exercises and do all the things that generals do. But what he's doing, right, in talking about this is a huge, dare I say, investment, is a huge challenge and will pay dividends for a long time for Marines in that division that are now going to get a lesson in this is how we fucking do it. And so I'm a fan of it. So
absolutely, that's the way to go, man. Because the real decider, the reason you do this stuff is to save people's lives on our end and cost lives on the enemy end. And if you just put it in those terms and stick to standards, then I don't give a shit what kind of population you have in the force, you'll have a good one. But everybody's got to be by the same standard, otherwise it'll be perceived as unjust. You know.
Well, it'll be perceived that way then, because you know that everybody won't do that, right? And it comes down to moral courage, just like you said a minute ago, right? Not surprising that a guy who's gone through the IOC pipeline, right? And so what does that mean? It means better instructors, knew their craft, somehow or other got selected to go there. And when you go there, you're reinforced because you're around other people like yourselves. And normally these guys are all of the mindset of I belong in charge. And so when they get put in charge, their attitude is like, oh, I hope I don't fuck this up. You know, their attitude is, it's about time, right? Let's go, boys. And it goes. They're not worried about being in charge because they believe they should be in charge. But there's another group, and I talk about the 1st Marine Division watching General Mattis when he was a CG, right? It's a really interesting position to watch his leadership from where I sat. And the division operated in 2004 at a pretty high level in Iraq. And I believe it did so because he scared the shit out of the mediocre guys.
Yep.
Because they knew that he would fire their asses. And so the mediocre guys performed at a higher level, right? All that shit, brilliant in the basics, right? Guardian angels, first do no harm, right? All that meant something. And you better be doing it, because if you weren't doing it and he showed up, your shit was done.
Right.
And I think the reason, because the good guys will always be good. The good women will always be good, right? It is that middle group of people that when you can shove, and when you're a division commander, you can't touch them all. So what do? You intimidate their asses.
Yep.
You make sure that they know that saying in the Marine Corps, no attrition, no morale, means this. If the shitheads don't get smoked, the rest of us aren't happy because we're dealing with them too much. And so I watched him do that, and it's powerful. You know, relieve him. Put a gunny in charge. Fuck it.
And we're still getting really good young Marines and officers because, like, where I'm at ATB, they send these guys when the guy's going to get out and, he's going to do his last 9 months in this job that the MEF forces the division of COF people up for. So we got two good captains in there now. We had a guy who got out of the Marine Corps. It was a heartbreaker. He was an outstanding kid, great kid to this day. He works for a company in Texas, but he was a GLT guy, and I watched him. I mean, all he needs is a little bit of, steerage, and I seen this guy just do miracles with unmotivated instructors and, you know, and a very eclectic training audience that had both males and females, and he did it, you know. He did it, though, by making him stick to the standards, you know, and we lost him. But I don't think we lost him forever. I mean, he's a huge Marine Corps proponent.
Right.
But there's kids like that out there. They're out there, and you know, we want to encourage them, you know, because that's the guy that General Mattis wouldn't have to scare. He'd just be inspired. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right, right. Which is, yeah, and those guys do great things. But my point in saying that is Mattis did scare the shit out of people, and it was important to the performance of the division.
Absolutely.
It was that those middle group who are afraid and are trying just to get through their command time, you know, so they can get to the far end and maybe get promoted again, and then they'll sweat out when they're their next command, and pray to God that they don't screw it up before it ends. And again, so that's a lot. That's not a small amount. Not everybody's a carnivore, you know, that's in the Marine Corps. You know,
they want to get back to the fucking D.C. Beltway area, so
the safety.
They get to know people who might be on the board to pick them for promotion.
Right, the safety.
Hey, I tell you who are carnivores out there, and that's Sergeant's Major. And that's a shot across their fucking bow, right there.
Yeah.
Because the CG's got to dictate your daily schedule. That's how screwed up your supervision is. If I were a sergeant's major, I would look upon. I would be unleashing a reign of terror.
You know something, Timmy, and I'm glad you brought that up because one thing I didn't really become clear to me until I went on recruiting duty is how senior staff NCOs are used to get the evidence to fire officers. And that happened all the time on recruiting duty. And now, and so it made me look at things different. So I'm watching these battalion commanders and company commanders, and sometimes higher than battalion commanders. They use a sergeant major. It's like the mafia where they get your best friend to put a pill in you. You know what I mean? And that's how people get fired, because that's like the final straw if we're going to fire a guy, if we can get his senior enlisted guy to backstab him. And, I've seen that happen to, multiple people. It happened to the guy who had 3-5 before. Outstanding guy. I don't want to mention his name because he might not want to put it out there. But he was after Malay. You know what I mean? And
Shut up then. Quit describing it. All right.
Anyway, but he was a standard stickler, and he paid for it. And he paid for it because he got backstabbed by his senior staff and CEO.
You know, but if that happens, fuck it. You know, we all can't be commandant. And if you let me tell you, you're better.
No. That's a different. That's a function of the same disease.
Right. I'm with you. But you know what?
No. But what I was saying though is for the good sergeant majors. You know, but I mean, Jeff is exactly right. Shit, I've been a victim of that exact dynamic. I know exactly what he's talking about. But for the good sergeant majors.
Right.
Would you not think that they would take the guys like Zickafuse would not take this memorandum to their first sergeants?
Absolutely.
And start instituting a reign of terror? Because
Zickafuse
is
great.
About us.
I know some great ones. You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't got to be great. Let me just tell you.
There are not enough great ones. There's too many mediocre ones, and they don't get fired. And we wouldn't be in this position if they were taking care of business. Right? And could you imagine being a sergeant major and seeing this shit in writing? I'd grab that
you're
thing.
Right. You're right.
I'd get everybody's fucking ass in some building, that field house, where back behind at Camp Lejeune, and I would say, shut the doors and everybody turn your cell phone off. Right? Because I've got some shit to say. This is an indictment of our leadership. This is what we do.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. It would be like, you know, whenever something happens and they have that the Hitler clip where Hitler finds out that Trump didn't get indicted or something. It's always that same clip.
Right.
That's what it would sound like if I was a sergeant major. I would be going batshit crazy. So that's a little genius move on Dave's part because that's reaching around and basically throwing that challenge ring down to see who's going to pick it up. At least it will certainly separate the wheat from the chaff.
Yeah,
it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see how this all, you know, kind of
plays out. For sure.
Plays out because again, I think most of us believe that this is a discussion that ought to be, you know, that ought to be had in the Marine Corps, and whether it is a natural ebb and flow after you come back from a fight that you have too many guys who say, yeah, I know the rules. They don't all apply. We can pick and choose them. You know, mm-hmm. If you have too many guys like that, then you got a problem. And if that infects the institution, then you got a problem. And when you see guys that have grown up in this thing that are saying, hey, we've got a problem, then you've got a problem. No doubt. I mean, Dave Furness, with all of his experience, when he rolls around and he was telling me, he said, look, my wife doesn't even like me to go to the PX anymore.
Right.
Because I see guys that have 2 days worth of growth on their face in the PX in their pajama bottoms, right? And like, are you a Marine? Are you a Marine?
Holy shit, man!
Yeah, are you a Marine? Yeah, I am. Like, you know, you're supposed to shave, right? Now they can see, right? They can see this is not going. Yes, sir. All right, get out of here right now. He said, I can't walk through the thing, so. But again, it's not about, and this is where this, the way this issue gets framed will play out. This is not about chicken shit discipline.
Right.
This is about if you think you can pick and choose what discipline that you pay attention to, and then you think you're going to go to war and you're going to be good, you're higher than a kite and you're going to get people killed and it's tragic. So you got to learn it and you learn it in garrison. That transfers to when you go to the field. That transfers when you go to war. And it's one system, and it's up is up, down is down, and we're disciplined. And so, interesting. All right, boys, I appreciate your time today. Interesting subject. And it'll be interesting to watch how this plays out, because, like I said, it's already part of the national news today, and you're going to just see more and more stories. So, interesting little discussion that's going to happen. Go ahead.
Real quick, buddy, can I plug something? Because I've done a crappy job about being a writer on The Freak.
Yeah, no kidding, man. What's going on?
I every time we get to talk, and I had such a good time, I kind of forget about that part. But at any rate, today, my article, my weekly update from Afghanistan posted, and it talks about Khan we recently lost three Marines, as of course you're all aware, outside of the Baugamera base. And when I saw the pictures from where they were hit, I knew exactly where the hell it was. Hey, Jeff, remember that the bypass road route bottle?
By the ECP. Yeah.
Right, right. And so you go out that ECP-3, you get on bottle, and then you go over that bridge, and there's that old guardhouse, old fort and whatnot, and the road bends right and off to Kabul. So right where that bridge is where they got hit, right? So in 2000, I knew exactly where it was. And I remember talking to Assad, who was working for Shaw Construction. I think it was like 2006 or something in Kabul. And in 2001, when he came, it was him and about 200 Marines from a 26 Mew. And I think they got in buses and trucks or something. They didn't have any tactical vehicles. And they had no idea what the hell they were going to find. So they're going down this road, and there's a tank in that draw where that bridge is now. There's a tank. The barrel's pointed at them. You know, they stop. They get out. They glass the thing. There doesn't appear to be anybody in it. Maybe there's a guy. Conlon says, oh, fuck this. He kind of walks up and hits the hatch. The guy opens up and says, hey, you got to pay me some rupees to go down and use this road. And Conlon goes, yeah.
Holy fuck.
Yeah, and the guy goes, I need to buy some shoes so I can walk back to my village, because, you know, the other Taliban have gone. And Conlon looks, and it's you know, this is Parwan province. It's cold. And sure enough, he's got no shoes. And Conlon says, okay, I'll tell you what. He goes, and the guy asks him, are you Russians? He goes, no, we're Americans. He goes, yeah, I thought so. The Russians didn't have so many planes. He goes, well we're going to go to our embassy, and I'll go try to find you some boots and stuff. And here the Marines will gather us something to give you some chow and whatnot. And Marines give him some MREs. But you need to, you know, lower the tank thing. And he goes, well, there's no rounds in it anyway, really. And he goes, okay. So he lowers the tank thing.
Good old Assad.
Khan gives him his business card. There's lots of Americans coming on this road, so just tell them you're with me. Don't point your gun at any. You know, just be calm, and they'll treat you fine. And let them know you're working for me, and I'll take care of you when I come back. And he found some speed lace boots. Yeah, because the embassy was untouched. Nobody had ever gone in the embassy for 12 years, untouched. And he found some speed lace boots in a Marine security guard place, and brought him back to that tank. He was waiting, gave him some dollars, said, here, you want these, not rupees now. And gave him a coat, and the guy went on his way. And I'm reflecting on that. 18 years later, in that exact same goddamn spot, we lose three Marines. In a million years, when Khan told me that story, or when that story happened to Khan, did either one of us ever suspect that so many years later we're losing Marines in that exact spot? It's just mind-boggling. Yeah.
Yeah. DLT guys know that pretty well. I'm gonna kind of dig into that and find out exactly what happened.
Yeah. 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 So I don't. Well, those guys being reservists, they probably were trainers, probably going or coming from the KMTC ranges, because they can't fly everybody everywhere in that country. They don't have enough helicopters for that. So
DLT guys actually go outside the wire, though, Timmy, with their Afghans. It's like the last of the guys who do that, to just do security patrols on the outside of, the wire there, Bagram.
Oh, I didn't. Why would reserve Marines be doing? Who the hell knows?
Well,
I assume they were trainers.
GLT, the Georgian liaison team, it's like a couple, you know, it's a pretty sizable number of Marines. It's been pushed back and forth from 1MEF to 2MEF. Matter of fact, like this guy I was telling you about, I talked to him about it a little bit, and, you know, he thinks that he knows what might have happened, but I'm going to try and find out, you know, if there's an actual SIG act on the thing and see if I can find out. But they did security. The Georgia guys started out down there in Helmand Province, lost a lot of folks, and then they eventually got to where there's security for Leatherneck, and then finally security for Bagram, and that devolved now to the reservists, and those guys are from New York, 125 up there by, you know, New York City and Massachusetts and so forth. So yeah, it's I don't know how long that mission
is
going
on. UFC was a land cruiser, a big ass land cruiser that the V-bed was in. And I had one of those. I mean, those things are a dime a dozen. You can't drive down a road without seeing three of them, you know?
Right.
It's not a shame.
And who, you're right.
All right, Timmy, tell everybody where they find your work.
Okay, the freak.com, it's a veteran owned and operated a service. A bunch of Rangers are the guys that have started it. It basically concerns a platform for veterans on creative writing. There's some traveling, there's a little bit for everything. My particular beat is every week I write a post on Afghanistan, and try to tell people something they didn't know, like that Assad Khan story, and just to provide some perspective, because it's not going to end well. I don't know how it's going to end. I know how it's going to end. I don't know when, but it's not going to end well. And it just breaks my goddamn heart.
Because I know, and that's a change, because usually things in Afghanistan turn out so well in history. You know, this one's not going to. That sucks.
Yeah. Hey, Jimmy, I thought that we were going to do okay.
Say that site again, because I'm writing it down, man.
The Freak, as in Radio Freak, F-R-E-Q, Freak. The Freak. Okay. They got a lot of good stuff on there. A lot of good young writers. Most of them a lot younger than me.
All right.
Yeah, I've had it, man.
All right, boys. Any final comments before we say goodbye?
No, it was just great as usual talking to you two dudes.
Yeah, you know, it's a good thing that we're having this discussion in the Marine Corps, because I think there's a lot of people that would tell you it's long overdue, and I think it's a three-sided discussion, in my opinion. It is, the Marines are not part of this discussion, all right? It is senior officers, senior enlisted, and then they're trying to reconcile themselves to how does this way that we choose to live, right, get reconciled with our culture that doesn't embrace most of the shit that we believe in as Marines and we know that works in combat. We can't live like you scumbags live and function in combat. It doesn't work like that. And so are we comfortable being assholes? Are we comfortable yoking people up? Because that is certainly going to get you complaints. But if we're content with putting more bodies in body bags, then go ahead and be nice. Go ahead and don't hurt their feelings. Go ahead and allow them to just slime their way through it, right? And, you know, we'll do more Keiko calls and funerals and say, fuck it. We didn't have the moral courage to do the right thing. And so that's, to me, where this debate is. It's senior officers, senior enlisted, senior mid-level on up on both in officer and enlisted, right? Do we have the moral courage, right, to require these things and look at our culture and say, we don't care what you think, right?
Right.
And just because you got your feelings hurt because he called you a shithead, you know, guess what? You were acting like a shithead. So don't act like a shithead and you won't get called one.
Exactly right.
Right. And all that, you know, again, the other thing that irritates me, you know, you can only call a Marine by his name.
Yeah.
Look, the rules that apply on every sports team in the country, you can't call him glasses or ears or, you know, whatever the hell his nickname is. No, right? That's demeaning. Get out of here with that bullshit standard, you know? So, yeah. Anyway. All right, boys. I appreciate your time as always.
Rob, take care, yeah, Timmy. Take care, Matt.
All right. There you have it.
No, it's always a pleasure, brother. Look forward to talking to you soon.
You can find him on the Freak, F-R-E-Q. Look him up, Tim Lynch. That'll do it on what day of the week is it? On a Thursday here on All Marine Radio. Don't touch that dial. You can hear this discussion about discipline, the Marine Corps, and all other things thereunto pertaining coming up again. The chef will be here tomorrow. Thanks for listening on a Thursday. Interesting discussion that's supposed to be had. It'll be interesting to watch where it goes. Have a great day. On a Thursday, All Marine Radio, over and out.